Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to go ahead and begin our meeting tonight, the Legislative Review Committee. The start time is approximately 4:39 p.m. on today, Tuesday, April 19, 2016. I will go ahead and recognize members of the committee, beginning to my right.
Councilmember Benito Barrios, 2nd Ward.
Councilman Henry Nickel, 5th Ward.
And, sir?
Deputy City Attorney Stephen Graham.
Thank you. We have a very full hearing regarding several matters that was published within the provisions of the Brown Act, and we certainly want to recommend individuals who have public comments not on the agenda. We're going to go ahead, if that's permissible, do we need to do that now, or can we wait till this is and move this to a later time?
At the chair's discretion.
So I'd like to go ahead and move the public comments items not on the agenda towards the end, so it'd come after item number 3. And if you do have a wish to address the Legislative Review Committee, we'd be glad to accept your comment, filling out the yellow form, and you can see Cheryl down here, and submit your yellow form. If there is an agenda item that you'd like to address, we'd certainly welcome your comment. And I'm sorry, the yellow slips represent items on the agenda, and the blue speaker slip represent the items not on the agenda. So for those individuals wishing to address the council or the committee here, if your item is not on the agenda and you'd like public comments, please fill out a blue speaker slip. We will be hearing that after item number 3 on today's calendar. At the very outset, I want to encourage public participation. We appreciate our public. We understand that this is a very important topic here in our community. But at the same time, we also wish to be respectful of others, and certainly respectful of the process. Today, our attempt is to hear the subject and address the items on the calendar in an open format. With that, I'd like to move on to closed session if there are any closed session items. Mr. Graham?
There are no closed session items.
Very well. Moving on to our open session item, item number 1, discussion of medical marijuana study, evaluation, research, and regulation. And this is at the invitation and suggestion of many of our council members here. And also, we have invited our city manager, and there's representation from our city attorney's office with Mr. Graham and another member of his office in the room. I immediately would like to have opening comments, and I will first and immediately point to my left. Councilman Nickel, if you'd like to provide any open discussion or matters regarding item number 1.
Well, just very briefly, this has been an ongoing matter of concern for our community. Certainly since I've been on the council, it appears that prior efforts, we are still facing the challenge of a proliferation of dispensaries throughout our city. We have seen any number of instances of various crimes committed in relationship to the operations of these dispensaries. I have received consistent comment and concern expressed by constituents regarding the operations of dispensaries throughout our city. That said, I think it is clear that there has been some movement in terms of legislation regarding this matter, certainly at the state level. And I would anticipate as time goes on that there will be changes in our federal legislation as well. And therefore, I think it's incumbent upon us as policymakers for the city of San Bernardino to keep an open mind in terms of how this issue is progressing, both in terms of the legal dimension of this issue, the commercial dimension of this issue, the social and public health dimension of this issue. It's a very complex topic, and I think warrants us to conduct due diligence to make sure that we are conducting ourselves and evaluating policy proposals with an open mind, that we do not give in to excessive emotion, but that we look at this from the perspective of what is the current state of the law, what is the current state of what appears to be a growing industry, and what is the state of what appears to be a transformation in terms of how we perceive the use and the proliferation, if you want to use that word, of cannabis and marijuana-related products. So with that, I will, again, keep an open mind in the course of today's discussion. I do not anticipate that we will come to any real decision today, but I think today is an opportunity for us to begin opening the discussion in terms of how we as a legislative body are going to proceed on this matter, what questions we need to ask, what avenues we need to explore, and how we can best educate ourselves to understand how best to address this very complex issue in our community. Thank you.
Very good. I certainly appreciate the spirit of Councilman Nickel, and to echo and mimic some of his observations is, in fact, the sentiment that I certainly express here tonight. I think we have an obligation as a city and a municipality to certainly understand and better recognize these opportunities as well as the challenges, and certainly understand what are the implications provided for the safety and well-being of our children, as well as business opportunities and the threats that may pose themselves to the greater good of our community. This is a very complex matter. This is a complex issue in the sense that we need to understand, better educate ourselves as a council and a city on the matters before us regarding marijuana policies and understanding, in fact, what are the nuances of this policy. I, at the very outset, want to express my deep appreciation for the public and their input and understand their perspective. Understanding this is really the bedrock of good policy decision making. If you understand the issues and better comprehend what is before us, both challenges and opportunities, it is, again, a great way to appreciate the process. And there will be, I believe, several hearings on this. And my sentiment is that we will better understand this policy after tonight's session. To my right, I'd like to recognize another committee member, Councilman Barrios. Sir?
Thank you. And I'm glad that we're here at this point now having this discussion, and it's long overdue. And so we're here, and we are not going to make any decisions today. This is going to be a learning process for the council. The members that are here, our city manager, our city staff, so that we can come up with policy. And we are going to need input. We are going to need input for those that have been in the industry, have studied the industry, have, you know, that has information. Because as far as creating the policies, I mean, we have no experience in that arena. And so I do recommend and highly encourage anyone else out there that may be viewing, that may be listening to this presentation today, to come out or bring other people that you know of to speak on this, whether it's for or against, because we do need to listen to both sides of the stories and justify what we're going to do and why we're going to do it. And by the more input we have, the better we are in a position to make the best decision for our city. There have been cities out there that have tried and have different regulations and ordinances in place, and I'm very, very curious on how those are performing and helping out those cities. And some that are not working, and the same thing. So I'd like to see that as well. So if anybody out there that has that information or can research, that's going to be very useful for us up here at the dais to kind of create and ordinances and regulation for this city, because it is an industry that's growing. It's something that we need to take control of here. And we as San Bernardino, this city has a huge opportunity to take advantage of the industry if we do it right. And so with that said, let's get this discussion started.
Very good. Thank you, Councilman Barrios. I appreciate Councilman Barrios's unique perspective and his passion behind this very topic. He and I have had several conversations in general on better understanding the complex nature and the issues before us, and I certainly want and appreciate his there's no name on this, Cheryl. I don't know who that's from. So I do appreciate Councilman Barrios. Thank you, sir, for being passionate about this topic and issue, and would welcome others certainly to provide that for us. As a reminder for those who have come in just a little bit late, I certainly appreciate our city manager, Mr. Scott. Thank you, Mark, for coming. Appreciate your presence here. And I want to encourage individuals who have come in kind of late here. There are yellow slips in the back. Please avail yourself of the opportunity to speak. Items on the agenda will be recognized with a yellow speaker slip. For those individuals that wish not to speak on any committee calendar item, you'll be using the blue slip later throughout this hearing. I would like to also encourage the public input process, either via calling the council office at 909-384-5188. That is a great opportunity to at least have a council reference tool behind you on the particular matter. I am always available to take and respond to issues regarding this matter, 909-384-5188. Also, avail yourself of the email opportunities should you have a presentation or a public comment. You can email the council office, attention LRC chairman or LRC committee, and that email address is council@sbcity.org. Once again, email council@sbcity.org. If you attention LRC regarding the particular matter, it'd be routed towards a legislative review committee. This time, I'd like to recognize Mike Madrid. Mr. Madrid comes from Sacramento and our state capital, and I certainly appreciate his perspective on what he has to offer. Mr. Madrid has, and I'll allow Mr. Madrid to share his credentials and his background, but in conversation with him, I appreciate Mr. Nickel, Councilman Nickel, for a good resource here for us this afternoon. And without further delay, Mr. Madrid.
Thank you, Councilman Chairman and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to come and visit with you today. Flew in from Sacramento, and I do want to explain a little bit about why I'm here and what we're trying to do in terms of providing a resource of information. I want to introduce also my colleague, Amir Deliri. My name is Mike Madrid. My firm is called Grassroots Lab. We've been working on behalf of city governments for the past 20 years. Started officially, actually, with the League of Cities in January of 2000 as a public affairs director, and served in that role for the past 12 years. This issue is perhaps one of the more complex that I've ever seen in terms of cities grappling with exactly how to address the situation for a whole host of reasons. And the reason why we came to visit with you today was to, again, be a resource either on the legislation that's working its way.
Mr. Madrid.
Yes.
If you would please, there to your right side, there is a kind of an elevator button. Can you either speak better into the mic there, or
can you,
we're challenged here. And
sure, reach in. Is that better?
That's a lot better.
How about I lean into it? Sir. A lot has happened in the course of just the past year on this issue, and a lot more is going to happen in the next year and years going forward. My firm, again, is a public affairs firm. We represent 99% of instances the public agencies that are grappling with public policy issues, a number of larger cities like yours that are grappling with this issue right now. At the outset, I would simply caution you to move meticulously, methodically, slowly. There will be a lot of public pressure on both sides or all sides of this issue. The issue is not going away. It's an issue that we have been approached by a number of folks to engage our services. We've politely declined over the past 5 or 6 years because we represent and work with just public agencies on these issues. When it comes down to what you're trying to accomplish, I just ask you to keep a number of things in mind. The first is any ordinance, if you adopt an ordinance, will and should by necessity reflect the values of your community, which are by definition very localized and very unique to the city of San Bernardino, as they should be. There is no model ordinance that any other city has adopted that will work as well or as poorly for that community as it will work for your community. And in order to develop the best possible ordinance, I would strongly urge you to engage in as much activity as possible, to garner as much community input, be it through polling, be it through mail surveys, be it through town hall meetings, preferably all of the above, to ascertain exactly where your community sits at this time. You will, of course, have to balance your community's input and needs with state law, which, again, while we passed some monumental legislation last fall, there are a number of bills working their way through the system that will also alter that legislation and continue to refine it as our state works to get better and better as we accommodate this new industry. There, of course, is also federal law, and there's also obviously going to be at least one measure on the ballot that may actually allow for a full recreational use, adult use of marijuana going forward. So not only do you have one of the more complex policy issues facing local governments in probably a generation, but there are also a number of wide variable factors, including public opinion, the commitment and support or opposition within your own law enforcement community, your own administrative staff, certainly the public surrounding elected officials. What other communities are doing or not doing will certainly affect the ordinances that you implement. And our goal, again, here was simply to fly down to be a resource, since we've had some relationships and discussions with a number of your administrative staff and elected officials over the course of the past year. We do this regularly with city governments. We do not represent any clients in this space. We're just simply here to be as a resource for you. And if we can answer any specifics, we'd be more than happy to do that. I will say one thing in closing before I sit down. Just in briefly looking at the staff work, you've done a phenomenal job. This is really well researched. This is a really great packet to begin the discussion. And frankly, it's a lot better than we see in most cities. So you'd be commended for that. Your staff is to be commended for that, as well as I think the encouraging statements we've heard from all the members at this point. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Question for you. Are you referring to the memo received to our former city manager, Alan Parker?
No, I'm speaking to this.
I don't have it. We don't have those.
I don't know what memo you're referring to. I did have the opportunity to meet with Alan Parker some months ago, but there was nothing definitive mentioned in that conversation. Again, it was just to be a resource to your city manager at that time.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Thank you for making the trek down from Sacramento on this very important matter.
We brought them.
Okay, all right. I'd like to also recognize our own Stephen Graham regarding, and he represents the city manager, I'm sorry, the city attorney. on this aspect, and I believe, sir, I apologize, I didn't understand that you were presenting, but I appreciate your hard work, and so I'd like to recognize what you have, there you are, Mr. Graham.
Sure. So what I've done here is I've been assigned to this issue in our office since it was initially brought forward in 2014. I've put together it's a lengthy PowerPoint presentation, but we'll skim parts of it because I'm sure you've heard parts of it before, but I wanted it all down in writing so you could refer back to it in an easy format and to also make it accessible to the public. I have a brief history here of the state law on medical marijuana. Like, this is the part that I'm probably going to gloss over the fastest. In 1996, we had Prop Position 215, the Compassionate Use Act. That was the first law that actually went into effect that allowed medical marijuana in the state of California, and the stated purpose was to ensure that seriously ill Californians have the right to obtain and use medical marijuana for medicinal purposes. What it really did was create an affirmative defense against criminal prosecution.
Excuse me, Mr. Graham.
Sure.
I just want to make for the public's record and benefit. Ms. Weeks has copies of the presentation. They are available to the public. Also, the unfortunately, the monitor here is not working, but the TV monitor is providing the same outline. So if you would like a hard copy, Ms. Weeks has them. And unfortunately, our television or our projector here doesn't work, but the TV monitor on that column does. So please follow us along. Thank you, Mr. Graham.
Sure. The two things that are primarily interesting is, what is a primary caregiver? So that's an individual designated by the person who has consistently assumed responsibility for the housing, health, or safety of that person. This has come up numerous times. We've had collectives claiming that they are the primary caregivers for people. That's more of an enforcement issue, and I'm not really going to get into enforcement on this presentation. But also what medical conditions qualify. There are several listed, very serious medical conditions, and there's also a catch-all for any other illness for which marijuana provides relief. That's determined by a physician. That went on for about 7 years before the state legislature passed Senate Bill 420 in 2003. This was the Medical Marijuana Program Act. This is the law that created the marijuana identification card that identifies qualified patients. It's the law that created the system of collectives and cooperatives and dispensaries that led to a serious amount of litigation as to what those entities are, what they're capable of doing. That one clarified what a primary caregiver was. Again, this is an individual designated by a qualified patient or a person who has an identification card. And we have housing, health, safety of that patient or person. And it added things like licensed care facilities, such as healthcare facilities, et cetera, and that primary caregivers must be at least 18 years old. It defined what a patient was, although in typical sort of legal fashion did it circularly. It said a qualified patient is a person who's entitled to receive the protections of the Compassionate Use Act. It expanded the definition of serious medical condition. It added several additional medical conditions and then added a more broad catch-all, which was any other chronic or persistent medical symptom. Some additional provisions were added in 2011 to address issues that had come up since the implementation. Specifically, they weren't allowed to be located within 600 feet radius of a school. That's something we've had issues with in the city, especially around Highland and E Street, because we have several schools in that area, and it's also a main commercial area. It also maintained local authority to further restrict the location or to ban. And you'll note that we'll get to it later, but the city banned dispensaries in 2011. Some notable cases, we'll go through these really briefly. The big one is Gonzalez v. Raich. This was that the state of California's medical marijuana laws had no enforceability on the Controlled Substances Act. That's the federal law which bans marijuana cultivation, possession, transportation, et cetera. I'm not going to go into the Controlled Substances Act because the intersection of federal law and state law is worthy of a discussion itself. A couple other cases, Ross v. Raging Wire said employers can essentially fire or discipline employees for using marijuana, notwithstanding the fact that they have an identification card. City of Riverside versus Inland Empire Patients Association, this is a seminal case. City of Riverside took this all the way up to the California Supreme Court, and they upheld that despite the Medical Marijuana Program Act and the Compassionate Use Act, cities can still ban dispensaries. We've had a couple of cases since then. Morrell v. City of Live Oak. This one was a very interesting case in that it upheld that a city can ban personal cultivation. Just so for the council's or the committee's edification, our ordinance, if you look at the enabling ordinance, has a specific exemption for personal cultivation. It's not in the code, it's in the ordinance section 2. But that's a document. It's ordinance 1349, if anyone wants to look it up. Kirby v. City of Fresno. That city had a ban on all marijuana cultivation and sales. And then there was an interesting side note about whether you should be using nuisance abatement penalties or criminal penalties, and that affected our enforcement here at the city. And then the most recent case that came out was Safe Life Caregivers v. City of Los Angeles. It was another challenge to LA's Proposition D. I honestly feel really bad for LA because of Prop D. Every time they try to change their marijuana law, they get sued a million times. But it reaffirmed that after the new law, which we'll get to, the Medical Marijuana Regulation and Safety Act, there still is no right to use, sell, or cultivate marijuana. And it also talks about whether you can do criminal penalties or not for violations of the city code. I have some interesting marijuana facts here. I took these from an article from Mother Jones entitled 24 Mind-Blowing Facts About Marijuana Production in America. I wanted to give my source out there, and I was instructed by the city attorney to state that putting these facts out there is not advocacy one way or another for regulating or banning marijuana. It's simply important to know the effects of marijuana cultivation does have, you know, serious uses and environmental effects. Those five states are where 80% of marijuana is produced or cultivated in the United States. California is one of the biggest ones. Most outdoor grows actually occur on federal, state, and city land. 72% are what are called trespass grows. Marijuana uses a lot of water to grow, like all agricultural activity. 60 million gallons of water per day, which is 50% more than is used all by the entire city of San Francisco. Electricity, an estimated one-third of America's marijuana is grown indoors. An indoor grow module for four plants typically uses as much electricity as 29 refrigerators. For those cities that have their own electric utility, this is typically how they find marijuana grows. They see a spike in electrical usage, and boom, it's a marijuana grow. It uses a considerable amount of electricity. Also, Colorado has been an interesting test case for the nation, seeing what happens after you recreationalize marijuana. These were taken from the Office of National Drug Control Policy. It's a division of the White House. Again, I'm sure you could find facts one way or another on most of these issues. I tried to find one that seemed unbiased. In 2014, after they recreationalized it, there was a 32% increase from 2014 in marijuana-related traffic deaths. I couldn't find the actual number. I could just find the percentage increase. So that could have been from 10 to 13, or it could have been from 10,000 to 13,000. I don't know. Colorado marijuana-related traffic deaths increased 92% from 2010 to 2014. THC results had increased 45% from 2014. Youth marijuana use, it went from 11.16% of youth were considered current marijuana users in 2013 to 14.58%, taking Colorado to the number one in the nation for youth marijuana use. Adult marijuana use went up as well. Now they're ranked fifth. Emergency room visits. In 2014, there was a 29% increase in marijuana-related ER visits and a 38% increase in the number of marijuana-related hospitalizations. Children's Hospital in Colorado went from 2 children having issues to up to 16 from 2009 to 2014, and there was an increase in the exposure of young children to marijuana. Extraction labs. I don't know how familiar the committee is with THC extraction labs. Typically, the cheapest way to do that is to use butane. And some of the more risky methods have a tendency to explode. There are safer ways to do it, of course. But they went from basically 12 lab explosions to 32 in a year over year. And then I don't know if this can all be explained by recreationalizing marijuana, but they had it in the report that overall crime in Denver increased 12.3%. On the flip side of this, taxes, the annual tax revenue from marijuana for the last reported year was $52 million for recreational and 10 for medical. Combined, it was about 0.7% of Colorado's general fund. These are some statistics that were taken from a continuing study done by the University of Mississippi. There are two sort of active ingredients in marijuana, THC, which is the psychoactive portion, and CBD, which is the one that is often studied for having medicinal qualities. The THC content has gone up steadily since this study began. The CBD content has not. This is another portion of that study, was the potency of marijuana. Just looking at the sampling of seized marijuana from 1995 when they started studying it to 2014, it increased from approximately 4% to 14%. The city, like I said before, in 2011, we banned operation of marijuana businesses in the city, including cultivation, manufacture, delivery, sale. The ban's located in the Muni Code at 5.05, 19.06.026. Because we have county pockets and we're surrounded by a lot of unincorporated county, I also put in there that the county also bans dispensaries and outdoor cultivation in unincorporated portions of the county. This is the part where we sort of get into the meat and potatoes, and this is where things have changed since the last time the council or any committee has met. Last time we met, we were talking about AB 266 and the potential ramifications of that law. It looked like it was going to go the way of most legislative attempts to update the state's legislative framework, but the governor stepped in and basically got all the parties to pass something. And it establishes the Bureau of Medical Marijuana Regulation within the Department of Consumer Affairs. That's BMMR. I usually just refer to it as BMMR. It delineated which departments at the state level are going to do what. So Department of Agriculture is going to regulate the cultivation. Department of Fish and Wildlife is going to do regulations on the effect of, you know, agriculture on streams. Department of Pesticide Control is going to regulate pesticides use in cultivation, things like that. It created a dual licensing scheme, city and state, and it maintained local authority. This was a really important thing for the league to regulate and ban commercial cannabis activity. Not banned, that's a typo. And the interesting thing about the MMRSA is that the state license requires as a prerequisite to application that you have the city license. So if you don't have the city's license, you can't get a state license. They're renewed annually. They can't also sell alcoholic beverages. So we can't have bars selling marijuana. We can't have liquor stores selling marijuana. They also put in licensing and hearing procedures. They put in portions about how the MMRSA does not interfere with an employer's right to maintain a drug-free workplace. Doesn't require an employer to permit or accommodate the use of marijuana. It licenses commercial marijuana activity. And so this is one of the biggest change from the MMPA. So the MMPA, which was the one passed in 2003, envisioned a kind of nonprofit, collective, cooperative growing of marijuana and distribution. MMRSA just goes straight for commercial. This is retail sales for medical purposes. And they also did me a great service, and they provided a whole lot of definitions as to what is marijuana, what is an edible, what is cultivation, what is possession, what is manufacturing. And there are different licenses for all these different types of activities. BMMR's job is going to be the oversight agency. Every licensing authority is going to have to report to them. They're going to be also responsible for licensing on certain categories themselves. They are going to be doing the licenses, and they're also going to be writing all the regulations. One of the things the state did here was they wrote some very broad outlines of what to do, but they expect the agency to write all the regulations and sort of fill it in. We don't expect the agencies to actually get any of that done until early 2018 at the latest. They still have to hire people. They have to start writing them. And my impression, we'll get to that at the end, is they're probably waiting to see how the November initiatives in the state go. Dispensaries, these are facilities where medical cannabis. So they've also started changing what they're referring to. They no longer, and you'll notice a change in the slides as well. This is when the state stopped referring to medical marijuana as medical marijuana, and they've started referring to it as medical cannabis. So I'm tracking that change too. That's what I'll be referring to it for the rest of the slides. Facilities, where they're offered for retail sale, it has specified security measures, and we can actually increase those at the local level if we feel it's necessary. They have to report to BMMR if they have a breach of security, and they reiterated that they cannot be located within 600 feet of a school. And that's one of the other areas that we can have increased regulation for. We can have further distances from schools. We can have other sensitive uses if we so choose. Deliveries. Deliveries is one of the hardest areas to regulate, but they have made it significantly easier in that area, in that deliveries can only be made by a dispensary. And deliveries can only be made to a local jurisdiction that allows deliveries. So if the city bans deliveries, they can't have deliveries here. The one thing we can't prohibit is carriage through the city. So, for example, hypothetically, if the city of Rialto allowed marijuana dispensaries and the city of Highland allowed marijuana dispensaries, deliveries could pass down baseline between the two cities. We couldn't stop it even if we banned it, which kind of makes sense. Cultivation. This was a sort of an area that got a lot of cities very concerned when it first passed. They had put in a sort of arbitrary March 1st deadline that if you didn't have a ban in place by March 1st or regulation, that you would forever cede the authority to license cultivation to the state. We already had a ban on cultivation, so we weren't really concerned about it, but a lot of other cities were. It basically led to a rush of cities banning marijuana cultivation, which was kind of the opposite of what the state intended. They removed that deadline in February, but by then it was too late. Pretty much every local agency that didn't have regulations went around it, had already banned it. And they had put in language in there that was important to the cities as well. It does not limit a city, county, or city and county from exercising its police authority under Section 7 of Article 11 of the California Constitution, which is the police powers section.
Mr. Graham, just a quick point of clarification.
Yes.
The ban that was in place is for the city of San Bernardino. The state required us either to place or enact a ban. You're suggesting that the city already has a ban on cultivation.
It does. The city has defined a medical marijuana dispensary to include any business that engages in certain activities, and one of those activities is cultivation.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
The Department of Public Health is going to be responsible for licensing the manufacturing, edibles, and testing. So this is an example of some edibles that we've come across. So pot tarts, hashies instead of Hershey's, things like that. So they're going to be regulating those things. Manufacturers are going to be required to package their products in tamper-evident packaging, use unique identifiers, labels, cannot be made attractive to children. They have gone, the definition of edible has always been an interesting one for everyone. They've said edibles are not food, but they're also not a drug. They're manufactured cannabis for human consumption. And so they're going to be, people's cells are going to be required to use generic food labels to describe edibles. So, you know, cannabis cookie instead of some fancy name. Testing has been another area that has seen a lot of interest. It was one of the things that when we discussed this last at the LRC, it was something that was a big concern, was, you know, basically the safety of our residents. How do they know what they're buying is what is advertised? The state has addressed that by having licenses for labs. Department of Public Health is going to have regulations for lab testing, and there are going to be labs that are going to do the testing. Labs cannot be manufacturers or distributors. They can only be labs. So presumably they'll be independent. What doesn't the law apply to? The new law has exceptions for cultivation of less than 100 square feet for personal use and 500 square feet for caregivers. But we are not required to allow that activity in our jurisdiction, and we can still put reasonable regulations on it. And those would probably be related to safety, you know, use of some of these lamps and electrical setups can be dangerous if they're not done correctly. Environmental impacts, you know, we had discussed in the interesting facts section that there are some environmental concerns. Those are going to be handed to Department of Pesticide Regulation, State Water Resources Control Board, Department of Fish and Wildlife, the same people who handle basically regulations for all their sort of agricultural activity. So, again, the dual licensing. They're going to be required to have the local license, permit, or approval before applying to the state. The city may adopt ordinances that have additional standards, requirements, and regulations for local licenses or commercial activity, and we may continue to ban them. The money, always a very interesting portion of it. The state created certain funds, and they also primed the pump by actually giving some money to this to get it all started. They may provide grant funding to local or state agencies, although it wasn't exactly clear what for, presumably to mitigate any adverse effects of marijuana activity. Also, cities may impose a tax on cultivation, dispensing, et cetera. The Act actually has explicit authority for counties. There's no explicit authority granted to cities. That's because cities don't require that sort of explicit authority, but counties like it because they tend to get sued a lot on that topic. The future, as Mr. Madrid touched on, I just want to talk briefly. The city has received three notices of intent to circulate petitions for different marijuana initiatives at the city level. I heard that we may have a fourth one filed today. Two of those failed to file with sufficient signatures by the deadline. The third one is currently outstanding. I'm preparing the ballot title and summary now. It's due at the end of the week, and that is the San Bernardino Regulate Marijuana Act. I put a map over there. I'm just going to briefly touch on it. I know it's kind of small. It's the biggest map we can produce. It has two overlay zones.
What? One moment, Mr. Graham.
Yes.
Are you suggesting that two of the three have failed due to lack of signatures, but that this third one is potentially an opportunity for residents to do what now?
So the third one hasn't gone out to get signatures yet. Before they do that, I have to type up what's called a ballot title and summary. It's an impartial analysis of the initiative. And at that point, they have to go and obtain the signatures. The first two, city clerk's gone. I'd have to ask city clerk exactly.
There is a representative from the city clerk's office. I don't know if she has.
I don't know if Delisha was.
Okay.
I don't know if it was. I don't think it was insufficient signatures. I just think they didn't bring the signature back, probably because they didn't have enough. I mean, it's pretty difficult to get that many signatures. Although I believe the San Bernardino Regulate Marijuana Act may have resources behind it that they're going to give a shot. The reason I put the map up is because it creates two overlay districts in our zoning code that essentially allow for the cultivation manufacturer side. Those are the orange dots. There's two locations in the city where they're primarily located, north of Orange Show and west of Waterman is the first cluster. The other cluster is up in the 6th Ward in the Hallmark sort of industrial area between the 215 and the railroad. The purple dots, which you'll notice are spread out throughout the city, are essentially the dispensary locations. So, for example, one of the dots is apparently the location of on Hospitality Lane. There's a adult club there. There's one at 40th and Electric. None of these locations apparently currently has a dispensary, but still researching that because all they did was give us a list of APNs. The city put the map together to try to figure out where exactly these things were.
And again, these are proposed by the applicants.
Yes. And in fact, we cannot change them. So one of the APNs that was provided isn't actually a valid APN. We don't know where it is, but we're not allowed to change anything they put on there. Now, these are the locations they proposed.
And these locations, the two, are represented by orange dots.
The orange dots on the map are primarily where the cultivation and manufacturing would occur. The purple dots are primarily where the retail sales would occur. So what we would know as a storefront dispensary.
So specific to my district would be north of Orange Show and west of Waterman. That is a proposed cultivation site?
Yes.
Or zone, overlay zone.
Cultivation zone. There's a dispensary on Hospitality Lane. It's also a dispensary proposed on Rancho and Meridian right on the Colton border. I can get the addresses. I can turn the APNs into physical addresses, and I'd be happy to distribute them to everyone.
Yeah, if you would, at maybe an upcoming hearing, that would be beneficial.
Absolutely.
And then you suggested, sir, that there was a APN that did not qualify, and that is not represented here.
It was an APN. So the thing about using APNs is that if you're using an old county database, the county shuffles around APN numbers all the time. And if you're using an old database, you may have an APN in that database that is not current. So we use the current database that the county has. We could not find it, and we could not find it historically. I assume it was a typo. But, yeah, I don't know where it is. The future, and I think this almost, I think it's our last slide, our last couple slides, state initiatives. We expect a legalization of recreational use on the November ballot. The one with the most support, as far as I can tell, is the Control, Regulate, and Tax Adult Use of Marijuana Act. It's a long name. Typically refer to it simply as the Parker Initiative, because its main supporter is Sean Parker. He's the founder of Napster and former president of Facebook. Other supporters include Dr. Donald Lyman. He's the former chief of the Division of Chronic Disease and Injury Control at the California Department of Public Health. Michael Sutton, former president of the California Fish and Game Commission, the California Medical Association, and current Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. The Parker Initiative will legalize recreational use of marijuana for adults 21 and over. It also is going to create a state licensing regulation and enforcement scheme. And this is why I think, honestly, the state hasn't written the regulations under Bummer yet. They want to see if this is going to pass, because if this passes, all that work will be essentially for nothing. They're going to allow, it allows local regulation, including bans. However, unlike the current law, we could not prohibit, have a complete ban on personal indoor cultivation, although we'd still be allowed to have regulation. Although I would again point out that our current ban does not have a complete ban on personal indoor cultivation. Another difference between how the Parker Initiative is currently structured and how the MMRSA is currently structured is the current state law tends to favor large businesses. It's designed to be a commercial, it's designed to be commercialized. The Parker Initiative focuses on microbusinesses, and what this typically results in is the allowance of cross-licensing. So under the current state law, you cannot both cultivate, or you can't cultivate, manufacture, transport, store, and sell marijuana. You can't do all those things. This one would allow that. So I think of the difference as, large breweries, selling, lots and lots of alcohol versus microbreweries at a sort of local level. That's the sort of distinction I see. So more than one license may be issued to the same person of business. No limit on cross-licensing. There looks like it's attempting to do some kind of limitation on taxes. It doesn't really touch on cities. It's mostly focused on the state. And again, usually if you don't touch cities, cities have the authority to still pass taxes. So I don't think it affects that. The general consensus is that it's geared toward preventing big tobacco corporate governance of marijuana. Still to come, as Mr. Madrid said, we expect state cleanup legislation. So we already have an assembly bill that is going to change essentially all the references of marijuana to cannabis in all the laws. So it's no longer going to be Bureau of Medical Marijuana Regulation. It's going to be Bureau of Medical Cannabis Regulation. There's going to be other cleanup provisions as well. We're keeping on top of it because people who may have lost the legislative battle in the first round may be coming back and trying to score some victories. Bummer still needs to be established, employees hired, regulations written, and the state agencies need to write the regulatory schemes. That is the end of it. I promised it would be short. Sorry it took so long, but I wanted to make sure that we were sort of all on the same page.
I appreciate your presentation, Mr. Graham. I want to open it up to members or comments from our committee to Mr. Graham. There are any comments or questions to Mr. Graham?
I have just a couple questions. In terms of the penalties we impose upon any type of operations that are not compliant, are we limited in terms of, because they're essentially considered a nuisance, from what I understand from the presentation, they are not considered criminal in terms of the violation. It's more considered essentially a code violation. Is that effectively how we treat those that are violating the existing city ordinance?
It's something that is changing. As I noted in a couple of the cases, that issue is actually being touched on by California courts now.
I'm just talking about the city of San Bernardino, how we handle it currently.
How we tend to handle it is we we tend not to use criminal penalties unless we have a really good reason for doing so. We try to keep this a civil matter. We start out by issuing the administrative civil penalties, which are simply daily fines.
Of how much?
$1,000 a day.
Okay.
Is
that the limit that we have in terms of the penalty we can impose?
That is the amount that California courts have said is constitutional. I have not found an amount higher that has been held constitutional. That's the highest we do. Yes.
Okay.
If they continue to operate and those penalties are increasing, at that point we pursue civil injunctions to shut down the dispensary. That is effective in shutting down that dispensary, and it has been effective in preventing them from essentially moving around the city. But the thing is that oftentimes, a new business will simply come in to fill the void left by the one that shut down.
One of the challenges I've observed in terms of the enforcement is pinning down who exactly it is that we are going to fine. In some cases, these are rather nebulous organizations. They do not have a specific individual. What methods do we use in terms of identifying exactly who gets fined or penalized? Is it anybody who's in that dispensary? How do we track them down?
Well, I don't want to go too deeply into our investigative techniques, and to be completely honest, that's more of a question that the police department would probably need to answer. But I can tell you that what we have been doing is going after the landlords who rent the property to the dispensary, because we know who they are, and they know that dispensary operations are illegal in the city. They're allowing it to occur on their property. They have real property in the city of San Bernardino that we can attach the liens to. And basically, what we've been adopting is a parcel-by-parcel approach down the commercial centers of the city, getting every landlord to understand, no, you cannot rent marijuana dispensaries. And it's working in that respect slowly, I'll admit.
The other challenge I'm confronting upon Kendall is a newly opened establishment called the Break Room.
Yes,
familiar with that. That happens to be in the county pocket. And so my next question is, to what degree are we coordinating and cooperating with the county, in particular as pertains to the regulation of these types of operations in county jurisdictions? Are they working with us? What penalties are they imposing? Because these operations are, in fact, in our city, even though technically they are in a county jurisdiction.
We do, because of the number of county pockets we have, and we've had, it's not the first dispensary that has done this, where they basically set up right on the border between the city and the unincorporated county. The county follows essentially the same tactics we do. They are prosecuted by a cross-deputized district attorney / county council. So he does the civil side, and then if that doesn't work, he does the injunctions. County council actually hired the attorney who was primarily doing our injunctions at Codicol, our outside council. So they're operating out of the same playbook we are.
And are they imposing the same type of $1,000 a day penalty, or is it a different penalty?
I'm not sure what the size of their penalties are. I do know that they use civil penalties. If that's a topic of further research if you'd like a further briefing on enforcement, I think enforcement would deserve its own briefing. And it's not something that I'm assigned to in our office.
Okay. Well, I think that, yeah, there are three overarching questions that I have in regard to both our current scheme in terms of how we regulate and how other cities and best practices seem to operate. First is the control. How are we controlling these types of operations? How are we enforcing the controls that we've put in place? And then what mechanisms of accountability are we placing on those who choose to violate the laws that we've put in place? Those are the three big questions that I'm going to be focused on.
Sure.
During the course of our committee discussions. And I'm going to be looking for some answers. That said, I'm also interested in terms of the mechanisms available to us. We talked about taxing, that there's the ability to tax these types of operations or the sale of this type of product. In terms of licensing, what structures are available? I assume similar to any other type of franchise that we might permit in the city. Is there a franchising mechanism that would be available to us under existing law? How would that work? Would it be based on a set fee? Would it be based on an open bid process where periodically we would auction off, in theory, a certain number of licenses to operate, say, a cultivation operation or some other type of related cannabis operation? What options are available to us in that regard? And we don't necessarily have to answer it today, sure, but I would like to get a good understanding of what are the revenue sources that we might better understand in terms of how these types of operations are taxed, licensed, or what other mechanisms of developing revenue might be available to us. So those are my only comments for now. I'm sure we'll have plenty more as time goes by. But I appreciate your presentation. Very thorough. Thank you.
Oh, very good. I appreciate the comprehensive list. I took good notes, Councilman Nicol. That's a very good way to kind of at least attempt to grab and better understand what the opportunities are for our city as a municipality. One of the opportunities, I believe, certainly is the enforcement aspect of what you had alluded to initially, is what mechanisms of accountability on enforcing the offenders or violators of whatever process. So I think it'd be important to maybe even follow up with, would you suggest policing police department?
I'd suggest that if you wanted a comprehensive presentation on the current enforcement practices of the city, that you'd get a joint presentation from the CPS division at the police department and the city attorney's office attorneys who handle the enforcement.
What's the acronym CPS?
A community policing specialist.
Okay. And they're overseeing the dispensaries and the enforcements.
They are non-sworn officers who investigate and cite marijuana dispensaries in the city.
And the current ban that they enforce.
Yes.
All right, moving on to Councilman Barrios. Any reaction or comments or questions of Mr. Graham?
Yes, my first request is that if we can have our actual ordinance at our next meeting, so we can look at it and be clear on it, and so the audience can see it as well, and so that we do look at it. I did review it with the mayor, and as far as our collectives being banned, I think it's left to interpretation there, and if we need to make that more clear, then maybe we need to make that more clear. Also, as far as the fines that have been collected, how are we tracking what is being collected? Are they being collected on a daily basis? I have a feeling that if I went out to dispensaries throughout the city, some may be saying, yeah, I pay them every day. I pay them on a weekly basis. I pay them on a monthly basis. Who's tracking that?
So that would definitely be a part of the enforcement presentation.
Right.
I can tell you that all the fines that are collected go into a general fund account. That's maybe something that finance may be able to help you with, how they track it. I can represent to you that the fines are not in lieu of a tax. There is no dispensary here that comes down to City Hall and pays us $7,000 a week to keep operating. That is unlawful. It's not something we would allow to happen. That being said, part of the issue with enforcement is that there's so much potential to make money with these kind of businesses that there are certainly some who would simply see it as a cost of doing business. And if they could pay us $1,000 a day to operate, they probably would.
And I think they do.
I'd like to open it up to Mr. Madrid if you have any reactions or comments on the presentation by Mr. Graham. I certainly appreciate your travel time and your preparation. I think what's important for us as a community is certainly to get a good idea from policy experts on this particular matter, or any other final concluding remarks regarding Mr. Graham or the road ahead.
Well, just generally, again, I think a fantastic presentation, a very in-depth way to begin the discussion. Let me just offer this. As I mentioned from the outset, each jurisdiction, each local government really does need to begin a process similar to this, and it's why we are going all over the state and advising cities to do just this. The League of Cities very appropriately, I think, asked cities to take a more protective position because of the legislation, really more as a way to pause so that you could have some breathing room to develop an ordinance if that's what you chose to do. Where we generally tend to see problems in jurisdictions is when they react in response to a ballot measure and try to rush a process to try to get something on the ballot either beforehand. And we've worked with the city of Santa Ana, we've worked with the city of Sacramento, we've worked even the city of Riverside, advising those cities on how to approach those issues, because there is an appetite, especially with certain members of the public, to kind of force the city's hand. I'm not here to make a judgment call as to whether that's justified or not, but we're seeing it increasingly occur. And they do it by ballot measure, seek to get those signatures, and then kind of force a vote. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the best policy for the city, but it often does spur a discussion like this, and so there are some positives that are coming out of it. I would strongly recommend, if you have the ability, to take a look at four cities of relatively similar size, but perhaps different, a different cultural and a different experience: Santa Ana, Long Beach, San Francisco, Sacramento. If you have the opportunity to meet and talk with some of those city managers and law enforcement there, or even take an ability to go and see and visit with their law enforcement agencies to do site visits with those dispensaries, I would strongly urge you to get outside of the Inland Empire and see other large cities with urban issues that face cities of your size similarly, to get a keen understanding of to what is going on. You will find, from my experience, there are some cities that have done this very well. The city of Sacramento, for example, has very few problems with their dispensaries specifically, are in the process of working with cultivators and growers at the current time. The reason why, and I've studied this and looked at this over the course of the past 7-8 years in great detail, law enforcement was at the table with the elected officials, with the professional staff, and with everybody who was licensed many years before they developed their ordinance. And so I'm not suggesting that law enforcement was overly enthusiastic about these changes, but they were at the table crafting the policy hand in hand with all of the stakeholders at the table. Where you saw other cities not take that course of action, you invariably see a more antagonistic relationship with law enforcement, and unfortunately that becomes very challenging for staff and for the elected officials to develop the type of policy that works best for their communities. So again, I would just strongly urge, to the extent that you can, take a look at some of those other cities that meet some of your demographic criteria. A lot of smaller cities in this part of the state that are moving very aggressively, they obviously deal with a very different host of policy issues that you face. And again, as you begin this deliberation, to the extent that you can incorporate your professional staff, as you obviously have and are continuing to do, bring in law enforcement early to sit down with some of the stakeholders and start crafting that public policy. Do you have a couple of quick suggestions, Amir, really, really quick on some of the policy changes, just for your edification as we begin?
Before you leave the podium there, I just had a quick question. How did law enforcement respond? Can you answer that question?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And again, the city of Sacramento, city managers, John Shirey, a good friend and a client of mine for many years. One other quick point before I answer that. He was also, I worked with John when he was the head of the Redevelopment Association. I know significant redevelopment issues in the city of San Bernardino. Those types of issues, along with water issues in your water districts, very important impacts on at least those two areas, not to mention power. Keep those in mind. The question, though, Councilman, was how was that dealt with? I will tell you that in Sacramento's experience, there was a lot of reluctance, but there was the will of a significant amount of the council to say, regardless of how we come out on this, we're not going to simply say absolutely not, no, under any circumstances. They sat down with the stakeholders, and there are now, I believe, 18 active dispensaries in the city of Sacramento. Every one of them has a very healthy, productive relationship, not just with the city and the city staff, but with law enforcement, and most importantly, the surrounding community, where they've actually sited dispensaries within yards of schools and within yards of parks. And the crime rates around and surrounding those communities have gone down because they've developed security plans hand in glove with law enforcement, with the elected officials, and Sacramento still stands out to me as somebody who's looked at almost every city from a city's perspective as really a shining example of kind of how to do this right. And as I mentioned, there are cities that I would argue have not done this quite as well. Another client was city of Santa Ana, who was responding in response to a ballot measure and had to hurry to develop a policy and an ordinance that law enforcement did not like. And what you ended up with was this kind of quasi-lottery system. Who gets what? How is it done? Is it random? What kind of... It was just a very poor way to develop public policy and choose who these actors are going to be in your community. Make no mistake about it, there are some very bad actors in this space. We all know that. There are also some very good actors in this space. And it's incumbent upon you as elected officials to speak with your colleagues on other elected body boards. Your professional staff obviously is in communication with other jurisdictions. I would urge you to sit down, have your law enforcement officials take what they're telling you. They obviously know what they're doing, but have them at the table as these discussions begin, even if you can have a representative at these types of legislative hearings, to get their input, work with the stakeholders. It can be a many, many year-long process, and sometimes that's where you get to the best policy solutions. And I think there are some very good examples of cities that have done this to very great effect and enjoy very positive relationships, great revenue, reduced crime, meeting the community need. Sacramento is one of those examples. It's one of the few good things that happens in Sacramento. It's actually happening in the city, not necessarily under the Capitol Dome. But I can show you, obviously, a number of larger cities where it's, frankly, a disaster.
Mr. Madrid, you had mentioned Santa Ana, Sacramento, Long Beach, and what was the fourth one?
Riverside. Oh, what, to go look at?
Yes.
I would go to the Bay Area, San Francisco. I mean, obviously, I think the cultural dynamics of San Francisco and San Bernardino probably couldn't be more distinct, but I think you owe it to yourself to get a better understanding. I mean, that's really kind of the Berkeley-San Francisco area is really at the forefront of this many, many years ago, but I think to get a sense of how law enforcement has dealt with this issue to address what the councilman just asked, the real critical component to the success of all of this is having your law enforcement, the culture of your law enforcement community working hand in glove with the elected leadership and your staff and the stakeholders in the community. If you don't have that, you're destined to have a very complicated, probably unworkable policy solution. If you're able to find that common ground, I think the mutual benefits are really quite extraordinary. And look, regardless of how you proceed, a change in the ordinance is going to change the flavor and nature of San Bernardino. I'm not saying it's going to turn into an entirely different community, but any policy has effects and has changes. We just find ourselves at a very unique place in history where there are very few jurisdictions that have done this with enough track record to say this absolutely works and this doesn't. Even when you look at the state of Colorado, what is working, what is not. And there are some policy problems, significant policy problems in Colorado that need to be addressed, especially by local jurisdictions. We can talk about those too at a later date or as you continue on that process. But I would strongly advise, to the extent that you can, incorporate and bring law enforcement in, find out what those needs are, find a solution, and have them at the table with these other stakeholders. Because what you will find through the course of working through this process, a lot of those bad actors kind of tend to disappear sooner rather than later. Those that are actually committed to doing right by the community and serving the community and legitimately being good actors and good citizens will be involved and stick with you through the process.
Very good. I know that you have a colleague of yours, Amir Paliri. I'd like to recognize Mr. Paliri and what he has placed two charts here on of the wall. And certainly, thank you, sir, for coming, along with your colleague, Mr. Madrid. Mr. Pilleri?
Thank you, Chairperson Valdivia, esteemed members of the committee, Mr. Graham. Just wanted to kind of do a little bit of clarification. Mr. Graham did a wonderful job, has a very clear understanding of the issue. I just brought these graphics by to show you a bit more of an in-depth look at what MMRSA is going to be offering your city. There's going to be 17 different license classes, or types of licenses. I think it's really important for you as a city to understand what's available to you and what works best for your community. I'm going to step away from the mic for just a quick second. I think it's really important for you to understand what's going to be best in your community. Big outdoor grows may not be the ticket for the city of San Bernardino. However, indoor grows may be. You may have some industrial space that may, you know, be ripe for that. Testing labs may be a good thing. Dispensaries may be a good thing. It's really up to you for you to look to your community to see what exactly is going to work for you. To my left here, this is just kind of an oversight of the different agencies that are going to be participating in what, and then I'm going to step over one more time.
This is kind of just a graphic of kind of the scheme of the whole medical industry. So basically you have the BMMR, which is the Bureau of Medical Marijuana Regulation. They're going to be licensing the cultivators, the manufacturers, the testing labs, the distributors, the dispensaries, and then there's going to be licensed transportation. You can see how all this works. Cultivators all have to get tested. Manufacturers all have to get tested. Everything has to go to the distribution center, and then those are going to go to dispensaries. That's kind of the lay of the land of how this framework works. We're currently tracking
10 bills in the Assembly and 2 bills in the Senate. There is a lot of cleanup legislation happening. We're keeping a pulse on that as we speak. But again, I just want to invite you to kind of take a deeper look into the framework that's been laid out by the state, and really think about what's going to work best for your community. These are the options that you have. There's a great opportunity for your community, for public safety, for enforcement, for accountability. I think all the things that Councilmember Nichols was hammering on. So thank you very much.
I really appreciate the almost cartoon of what is taking place, and I would certainly appreciate that. You can send it via email, or if you have hard copies, council@sbcity.org. We'd love additional information, and please keep our email as a resource, and we certainly extend our invitation on further LRC hearings at your convenience. We'd love to hear from you.
We'll send it to staff.
Wonderful. I'd like to now open it up to public comments. I'll be recognizing several individuals. If once again, for anybody who has come in a little bit late here, they'll be using the yellow speaker slips, your information there, and then hand it over here to Cheryl, and the chair will recognize you. Beginning right off the bat would be Scott Olson, followed by William Ciosi. Mr. Olson?
Yeah, my name is Scott Olson, and due to the actions in the paper of another city council person who thankfully is no longer on the LRC committee, the disclaimer here has to be made for all people here. I've never smoked marijuana. I have no medical uses for it. And I was a drug and alcohol counselor for over 5 years dealing with addictive behavior. That being said, before you start talking about medical marijuana, cannabis, or whatever you want to call it, it was always marijuana in my day, and it still is marijuana, The first thing you have to do is define the parameters before you implement any changes. You've banned it. We have a law in place. This is not like we have not put a solution into law or ordinance or whatever you want to call it. Now, we can talk about all the successful cities who have implemented medical marijuana, but guess what we also have to do? Because we have a ban, we also have to look at the other cities. We have to look at them in the terms of who has successfully implemented a program that bans medical marijuana that actually accomplishes the goals that our city wanted to accomplish with our ban. On that note, one can talk about 2011, but we cannot go talking about 2011 without talking about 2013. 2013, one day after we recalled the city attorney, we eliminated all city attorney investigators and the enforcement side of the current legislation. We've had a two-year unmitigated disaster in our city when it comes to medical marijuana, so much so that I can actually talk to people who support medical marijuana and agree with them that it's out of control. The lack of enforcement and regulations created by certain elected officials in this city have literally made this city a mess that those who don't use marijuana and those who would like to support it actually agree with each other. Okay? Now, if you're going to look at a dispensary, security is a must. Where it's located is a must. We must have the tightest regulations. Lastly, you have to know who's actually running the business to hold them accountable. If you can't have those three points, you have chaos like our current elected officials have created. And I'm not blaming you guys because the people responsible aren't the ones sitting in the chair right now. Okay? None of them, even the city attorney's representative. He's just here as a city employee. Revenue. Let's face it. This is something that gets very expensive. Right now, we're looked at the reality. We're bankrupt. We can't afford what we've got. Okay? If you're going to make any changes, you have to have the revenue to cover all the expenses. We're bankrupt. We cannot pay for ideas, no matter how wonderful they are, unless we have a mechanism and a tool that actually puts us at least on an even. If we're going to have medical marijuana or cannabis, agriculture, dispensaries, all of the above, whatever, it has to be they pay for everything plus.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Next speaker is William Ciosi, and I failed to mention that there is a time limit. We're suggesting individuals speak within a three-minute range, so if you'd please honor that, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you. Good afternoon. William Ciosi, President Brown and Mary Democratic Club, San Bernardino County. I want to thank the City Attorney's Office for the presentation. Thank the Legislative Review Committee for having this discussion. This discussion has fallen and failed to happen multiple times. And so there's certain things that were brought up a few times today. One in particular, Mr. Valdivia, you mentioned all these complexities, the laws changing, the ins and outs, the different industries, the different, and so you got somebody that knows that in and out, right here in the city, volunteering to help you all this time. Mr. Madrid, you mentioned that we need to have regulations that reflect the values of the community. And if you've read the proposal that I put together, it creates a cannabis commission to keep track of all these complexities, to be a resource for city council and for the community in general to go to and ask questions and get answers, and that this commission would be made up of members of the community so that they can make the regulations that reflect the community, and it incorporates law enforcement so that they get to be a part of that as well. Everything that you keep talking about is everything that I've been begging you about for years now. And it just keeps coming back and coming back and coming back. And it seems like the only invitation I get to speak with you at all is right here. So I want to thank you for your time. Let you know I'm filing again for Jesse Act. I updated it to allow for this state changes, and I'm still here. You don't have to pay consultants to fly in. You don't have to talk to millionaires who are trying to persuade you to do things your other way. You don't have to get bullied by people that are going to come in here and pay $10 a signature to make things their way. You've had the community asking you. And so I thank you for your time now.
Thank you, Mr. Ciosi. I call up Damian Martin.
Thank you, Chairperson, Committee. I'd like to start by first, thanking and ultimately congratulating the LRC for finally taking up this issue. The reason being because I don't want to say if, I want to say when. When done and when regulated right, I think the medical cannabis industry is going to provide tremendous benefits to this city. So just to introduce myself, I've spoken before the dais on this issue before. My name is Damian Martin. I'm a Navy veteran. I was in the Navy for 6 years. I was in Intel, did a bunch of deployments with SEAL teams. After I got out of the Navy, I did consulting for the government agencies and Fortune 500 financial companies. And I've spent the last 3 years getting my law degree from UCLA, particularly focused on the cannabis issue policy. That's kind of just all a long way of saying that basically I live, sleep, eat, and drink medical cannabis policy, law, and regulations. When I talked about this before, what I mentioned to the city council was this isn't really about my personal feelings or my personal or medical feelings on medical cannabis. It's all about good policy and good governance and doing what's best for the city of San Bernardino. And I said that what really kind of changes all this and should have spurred action on part, and it's actually happened, is the Medical Marijuana Regulation Safety Act. Mr. Graham, as someone who does this every day, I work for numerous law firms, and this is essentially all they do is medical cannabis law. I say thanks for putting together the presentation. It's tremendous. I just want to touch on one issue that I think is worth further amplification, and it ties back to what I said. The tide and the policy and the laws are changing, and this is occurring at the federal level in addition to the state level. So just for the edification of the committee here and the public, I just want to touch briefly on the federal law and how that's changed. So first and foremost, over the last 7 years, the Obama administration has an evolving policy as to medical and recreational cannabis in the states. What that policy has kind of landed on as of 2013 is that the Department of Justice is going to delegate all enforcement of medical cannabis and recreational cannabis laws as long as the states and local governments have robust regulatory controls. That's an actual quote. So I think that's important to recognize that in order to kind of move forward this from a federal level, this city needs to have robust regulatory controls as to medical cannabis. And then that policy, that's just a policy. It could change. It's definitely going to change when this goes into a new election. But what's really important is that two congressmen from the state of California have included a provision in the spending bills that have passed through the federal government. And what that provision provides is that the Department of Justice cannot use funds to stop states and their constituent local governments from implementing laws related to medical cannabis. Thank you.
Mr. Martin, if you would, I'd be happy to extend a minute for your closing arguments, but if you would, please, 1 minute.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Like I said, this is passed. This is the law of the land. So as you are kind of exploring this issue and looking at it further, federal law and the federal government is not an obstacle by the law of the land. And there's another important feature to that provision that's been included. It's a bipartisan provision. It was included by Congressman Rohrabacher and Congressman Farr, both of California. Is that the federal court in the Northern District of California has ruled that that provision also prevents the Department of Justice from stopping the businesses and individuals that ultimately assist the states and local governments with implementing these rules and regulations through the actual operation of medical cannabis businesses and providing medical cannabis to patients. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. would like to encourage any final comments from our members of the public. Please fill out a yellow slip. We appreciate our public input. As I turn to the committee here, I would ask for recommendations. Shall we continue the hearing for our next LRC meeting and continue this discussion? What are your thoughts, Mr. Nickel, Mr. Barrios?
Yes, I do agree that we do need to continue the conversation and this discussion on what we're going to do and how we're going to regulate for the city. And if we even can, have an open dialogue with those that are visiting here today from Sacramento and Mr. Martin as well, to receive, and William Shochi, to get their input and expertise on what they know about this industry and how they can help us possibly come up with ordinance and policy for what the city needs. And we also need to determine what direction do we want to go into. Are we looking at only regulating collectives or dispensaries? Are we going to have test sites? Or what do we want in our city? I think that's something we do need to determine as well before we even start moving forward on discussing policy.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Nickel?
Well, I would like to look into the recommendation of visiting some of these other cities, really conducting a deep dive in terms of better understanding the complexity of this in the context of what other cities have done. I would like to maybe coordinate with the city manager's office, city attorney's office, to put together some type of a schedule so that we can begin mapping out how we're going to methodically begin approaching this issue. And I think it's important that before we begin discussing too much detail, that we do our due diligence and visit other cities that have had some experience, and hopefully start formulating our questions and perhaps even receiving some of the answers to the questions that we may have in the context of our colleagues elsewhere in the state. So I'd like to extend a request to our city manager and to our city attorney's office that we look into how we would put together some visits and get out there and conduct some investigative work, and then come back and formulate our methodology in terms of how we're going to work through this, and hopefully come up with some conclusion in terms of how we're going to address this. So without any objection, I'd like to, I don't know if I need to make that in the form of a motion or some other action, but I think it's clear that this is not going to be completely resolved this meeting. It will probably take the course of quite a few meetings before we have a recommendation that we can move forward to our council. So,
thank you.
I do want to add, though, if there are any other types of presentations that people do want to present, to forward them to the council so that we can get approval through the chair so that we can have those presentations brought forward.
Thank you. Absolutely. I want to encourage our I think Mr. Madrid hit it right on the head. We certainly welcome various vantage points and discussion points, and emailing the presentation within 2 weeks of the LRC would allow for the committee and our secretaries and staff to prepare and include this. So I want to encourage you, if you do have a presentation, formalize it, please, in a request in writing, and council at sbcity.org, attention LRC chair, and we'd welcome your input.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If you would, just quickly, I would also like to get some clarification on this particular memo that we received regarding public opinion research. Perhaps, I don't know if the city manager wants to provide some quick comment in terms of the proposed approach in terms of gauging relative public opposition or support for any particular course of action.
Yeah, in fact, Stephen may know more about this than I do. The material that I gave you apparently had come out of an LRC, as a result of a LRC meeting that happened previously. where there was the idea of going out and doing an opinion survey, I gave you the copies of the file materials, basically. And I wanted to point out to you that the second item that is attached there says very prominently, not for distribution. It's a working document. The idea being, if you're going to do an opinion survey, you don't want to give everybody in the world the survey before you ever take it. So I'd ask you to be discreet in how you use that tool. This was a proposal from a firm, and I think perhaps I understood that Mr. Madrid had given a couple names of potential firms, and that was one of them. We haven't talked to them since I've been here. If you decide that that's something you want to recommend to the City Council, we, of course, can do more with that and bring you any other information. The date on the second one is December 2nd, which I think probably in part explains that things didn't immediately follow. Other things have happened here, and it's taken a while. But if you're interested in pursuing that approach, we can talk about it further.
Mr. Scott, are you suggesting that you would need council directive as a whole on a polling, consulting fees and associated costs? Is that your recommendation?
I would certainly want the City Council to touch that decision before we went out and started doing research all over the city, yes.
But well, I'd like to go ahead and entertain that motion if we could within the framework of the law. Mr. Graham, do you have any?
Sure.
Any?
I can add a little bit of context to what has happened here. The former city manager had met Mr. Madrid, and one of his conclusions was that when this topic came up before the committee, he wanted to be able to present some ideas on how the community felt about having dispensaries, having cultivation, what kind of regulations they thought were necessary, whether their minds changed if they were taxed, and what those taxes may be used for. So to that end, he had engaged FM3 to do this consulting, and my understanding was he issued the PO.
I don't think so.
Okay. So the city manager can certainly do this under his own authority. It seems like he's asking for input on it. So I think a motion's perfectly acceptable.
Very good.
It's not the budget authority that would concern me. It's that if we're going to survey the population of the city, I want your colleagues to know that was going on.
Understand. Right. I understood. And I respect your good authority and decisive recommendation. I want to go ahead and make that recommendation that we at least either this firm or some other, but provide that discussion point with the full council's blessing. I think I would recommend that it probably go under closed session matter at our next council meeting, or what are your recommendations, Mr. Graham?
I can't think of what item we'd put that on under closed session.
Yeah. I think it's an open.
Open.
Yeah, we can put it on the next council agenda for open.
So I'd like to move that at least
I'll second.
Providing that, and let's hear that, and let's talk about that publicly at our next council meeting. I think we need to start moving something, and the waters are stirred here, and we need at least to get some traction. So I'll make that recommendation. I think we have a second. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any objectors?
Let me just say, for anybody that just heard this, that the next council meeting, you mean the next one we can make the agenda for? Because our deadlines are now longer, so it would be the second meeting in May before we could get that on.
Okay, fine. So it's not the May 2nd meeting, it's right. The May 18th meeting. Very good.
Right.
All right,
I'm going to have to leave. I'm an hour late to another meeting, so if that's enough, I'll...
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
And I would also like to move to continue this item to our next LRC.
Very good.
Could I just get again a list of information that the committee would like for the next meeting, so I can make sure that the right departments show up?
Well, as I understand it, I would certainly like, and please chime in if you have your mics on, gentlemen, to expedite the wish list here. Councilman Nichol had suggested what mechanisms are available to cities, what structure, whether a franchise agreement or a franchise mechanism to capture the how, the who, and the what. Is this based on a agreed fee, or is this better used as an RFP process? I think we need to ensure that we have what mechanisms of accountability to violators and offenders of existing ordinances on the books. I think what's recommended is that we also include enforcement practices with a presentation by the city attorney and community policing services. Mr. Barrios has suggested what is being collected, so I think a finance component here. Okay. On what fines are being enacted, what is being paid, and where are these monies going to. And I'd open it to my colleagues here on any other supplemental information or departments that you would like present at our next meeting.
I think you pretty much covered the ground. Again, the three areas of concern I have is control. Clearly, we don't have good control over certainly the dispensaries, but I think in terms of the more complex aspects of the industry, I'm very concerned about the degree of actual control we have. I've been on weed maps. I watch it religiously, and it just seems to the number of dispensaries in operations just seem, it's like whack-a-mole. As soon as one shuts down, another one pops up. And so clearly control is a serious challenge, and I'd like to get the perspective of our police. But I think there's also, importantly, I think there's a regional dimension to this. And I think the fact that we have county pockets in the city, I think bringing somebody either from the sheriff or the district attorney's office here to provide some perspective on what's happening on a regional level.
Sure.
I'd like to make sure that we have that level of coordination. Certainly then the enforcement aspect of this, I'd like to get the perspective of our police, maybe the sheriff, again, district attorney, in terms of what are the challenges, what have been the successes, what's working, what's clearly not working. And then, as you touched upon, the accountability, the financial aspects of this, ensuring that there are that those that violate the rules, that we have some penalties that hopefully have some bite to them. $1,000 a day just to me does not seem to be like enough bite for an industry that is making an enormous amount of money, and it doesn't seem to be having an effect. But certainly we need to be compliant with the law and don't want to put ourselves in jeopardy in terms of current state law and limitations. So control, enforcement, accountability, those are the three big items I'm going to be looking at this whole discussion.
Could I make two recommendations?
Yes.
To the chair? I'd recommend a presentation on, from the financial aspect, the difference between taxing the marijuana and doing fees. The fees can cover things like the enforcement program, you know, processing the application, things like that, and also the taxing side. What are other agencies, what are other entities that are taxing it? What rate are they taxing it at? And the reason I think taxing is important, because in order to pass tax, we would have to go to an election, and we have one coming up in November. So if that's something you're interested in.
Yeah, I would like to look at the pros and cons of both or one or the other and really have a good understanding of what's the optimal approach for us.
And I actually think Mr. Martin has a presentation that he's already broken that down.
Okay.
So he can present.
And then the other side of that would be, this is primarily will end up being a land use issue. So I think it's really important to get community development involved, looking at the different license types that are
very
allowed
good.
And see where in our zoning code those types of activities make sense. So, you know, we have areas zoned for agriculture, things like that.
Okay, if perhaps between now and the next, I don't know if maybe you could communicate with the chair, but maybe come up with some, you know, some idea of how we're going to structure this discussion as we move forward.
Certainly.
But I think you've touched on all the key areas that I'd like to look at.
And thank Mr. you. Graham, if we could perhaps maybe, as a chairman, I'd like to maybe sit with you so we can construct a good agenda where we kind of address all of these issues that my fellow colleagues here presented tonight. Also, I'd like to recommend, I certainly appreciate Councilman Nichols' idea of engaging with these four communities that Mr. Madrid has suggested. I have kind of preliminarily scheduled weekend tours. I kind of see it as two buckets, a north and a southerly tour. So we could probably drive our own personal vehicles to Santa Ana, Long Beach. That would be the southerly portion of our tour. Engage in conversation, understand and appreciate. I would like to suggest a weekend tour only because I think Councilman Nichol, yourself, we all work during the week. So with maybe a possible Friday night type of stayover opportunity and a full presentation and tour and conversations with those elected officials. In our proposed calendar for LRC, so I'd like to make a recommendation. Obviously, we'd work in tandem in cooperation with the city manager and city attorney. I'd certainly enjoy their presence there along those tours if possible. But I'd like to just recommend a couple of dates. I don't know if we probably need to make a motion or whatnot, but I like to set dates because it's a goal. And if we don't set dates, we'll never do it. So I'd like to recommend this is just a draft idea, the weekend of May 13th, the opportunity of attending and maybe a Northern Cal component of San Francisco and Sacramento. So a Friday night stayover, travel up late Friday afternoon, and then staying over May 13th, and then understanding and then touring these and interacting, engaging with policymakers on the 14th Saturday, and then a possible return flight home on that 14th late afternoon or late evening. On the southerly portion, I'd like to recommend that we take a tour to advance this conversation and dialogue is the weekend. Pardon me, I'm suffering from a cold. The second week in June, which would be the 10th, with a possible stayover, June 10th, Friday evening. And if we don't need to, that's fine. But and then engage with policymakers in a tour on Saturday, June 11th. So I want to throw that out there just as an opportunity to actually book something.
And I have no problem with that.
Working on this, and we can start engaging and moving the ball forward. And understanding. So those would be my recommendations. Certainly appreciate Mr. Graham, and thank you for your presentation. We will go ahead and do we need to take a motion to move this and continue discussion on this? Or
no, you've already made that motion.
All right, very good. All right, moving on to item number 2 on our open session calendar. Once again, if you have would like to speak on this matter, I encourage public input. This is the discussion of Mayor and Common Council meeting times. Was referred to the Legislative Review Committee at a Mayor and Common Council meeting on the 4th of April of this year. I'd like to make a solid recommendation to my colleagues here. With the growing pressure of our council members, we have what I would call a volunteer council. And the council is paid $50 a month to do their duties and responsibilities here. And it's certainly a taxing obligation for some. And while that has presented challenges in the past, I think the better opportunity is expressed here for our public input. The public remains at a disadvantage for having council meetings prior to the completion of a work day. And so our city has enjoyed for many, many years council meetings that start before the 5 o'clock p.m. hour. Now, the charter affords and suggests and dictates that we shall have the council meetings on the first and third Mondays. What I am proposing here and would like to open the discussion is to move and alter the council times. Currently, we have a closed session begin time of 2 p.m., and we have allocated a roughly two-hour window, and with our public meeting beginning at 4 p.m. To encourage our public input, I would like this committee's recommendation and approval. I have a recommendation of beginning our closed session time at 5:01 p.m. and beginning our public meeting at the hour of 6:30 p.m. on the first and third Mondays, and recommend this to the full council. Are there any discussion points?
I have no objection to that recommendation.
What were the times again? 5 p.m.
closed? 5:01 p.m. began closed session, and then 6:30 p.m. would be our public session start time.
And I just to clarify, I assume this needs to be presented to the full council in the form of an ordinance?
Yes, that's correct. It would need to be an ordinance.
Okay.
Walk us through, Mr. Graham, on the ordinance and what's involved, and kind of walk us through what that looks like.
Well, essentially, it would be amending the portions of the municipal code that set the council's meeting times. If this body wants to, you could direct me to prepare the ordinance, unless you'd prefer to have a discussion at the council level before the ordinance is prepared. I guess it just depends on how urgent you believe this matter needs to be attended to. The ordinance would not be difficult to prepare. That's why I'm volunteering, before knowing how the council feels.
I think it would be advisable to go ahead and draft something so that we have something to consider and discuss. I think I've read the ordinance at least once before. It's pretty straightforward. I think the recommendation is pretty straightforward. And I look forward to discussion and full council based on the recommendation that was here today. So I would recommend we do draft an ordinance for consideration by the full council.
I would be happy to amend my motion to include that. Mm-hmm. Just for the record, I think drafting an ordinance with those times specified, and I if there's no objections, I would request that we go ahead and present that at the next possible council meeting. That may be May 18th, so be it. But would love to move forward that item to the full council.
I'll second that.
If there are no objections, we will be sending that on to the next council meeting and available, and certainly appreciate your work, Mr. Graham, on preparing that ordinance. Thank you, sir. Moving along to item number 3 on our public calendar is the discussion of legislative review committee meeting times. I understand the working nature of our council members here present on this committee, and I'd like to recommend, I hope that you have received this, but if there are no objections, I'd like to move our meetings to a monthly meeting format to begin on or about 4:30 p.m. And I'd like to open that up for discussion if there are any individuals who'd like to discuss that.
I have no objection.
I would actually request it to be at 4 p.m. just because on Tuesdays I do have obligations in the evening at 6:30 p.m. And obviously today I had to call in to ensure that, you know, my absence was going to be known. So if it's 4 p.m. is okay with you guys, I'd like to.
I'm okay with 4 p.m.
That's fine. 4 p.m. if Mr. Nicol, you're amenable to that.
Nothing before 4, though.
Mr. Graham, are you our committee are assigned?
I am not actually assigned to this committee. I'm assigned to the marijuana issue, which is why I was here today. And I thought we might be here a while, so I paroled the other attorney and said I'd stay till the end. In terms of this, I mean, it's simply a motion. It's the committee determines its times.
Very good. So we have a compromised start time, 4 p.m., and for the next quarter, it shall be on May 10th, 2016, at 4 p.m., on Tuesday, June 14th, 2016, at 4 p.m., and on July 12th, Tuesday, 2016, at 4 p.m. in the Estrada Conference Room, unless noted otherwise. I'll make that motion, and if I can get
I'll
a second.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Very good.
Sensing no objections, so moved and carried. I appreciate your time. Now our last item is any public comments. If you would, please, if there are no blue slips, I'm calling once, twice. Items not on the agenda, open for public comments a final time. I don't see anybody, and I appreciate everybody's patience and time here tonight. We'll motion for an adjournment, and we appreciate everyone. So our next meeting, again, will be on Tuesday, May the 10th, 2016, at 4 p.m. and we're so adjourned. Thank you.
Where's your gavel?
Okay. Oh, great. Cool.